Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Viewpoints on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, a podcast series with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt, where we do like to update you on developments throughout the global market and macro landscape. With that, Burkhard, welcome back. Thank you for dropping by today and for spending some time with our listeners and our clients.
Thanks, Dan, for reaching out. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Burkhard, for today's conversation, I would like to hear your views on three conundrums which seem to keep markets guessing. They relate to gloomy consumers, suspiciously calm oil markets, as well as higher for longer interest rates. So, with that, let's begin with the first conundrum. Now, this week, we did see several consumer as well as business owner surveys. What was surprising about their results is that many of the respondents remain unhappy with the economy as well as inflation, and yet we see record high stock markets perhaps telling us a different story. So who's right here? Can you reconcile this conundrum for us?
Well, as you'd expect, Dan, I think markets are always right. That's just me. But look, to be fair, I think unhappy consumers must also be taken seriously. For one, simply because their fears, you know, about a possible or actual cost of living crisis can be infectious, as Franklin Roosevelt pointed out in his famous 1933 inaugural address, where he said, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself." Having said that, I think the conundrum should disappear over time. Let me just give you three reasons why I think the difference between the mood surveys and stock market is and will disappear. Number one, you know, a lot of consumers are upset that many staples, think about your Snickers bars and your Chicken McNuggets, are still pricier than they were before inflation started to raise its ugly head. Probably some have falsely hoped that as inflation would decline, prices would go back to where they were before. Of course, that's not happening. But look, my take is if salaries and job opportunities keep growing, people will forget, adjust, and then life moves on. And that's how growth and time cure many wounds. We'll get there. Secondly, look, here's another conundrum. While some are moaning about the rising cost of living, the biggest rise in U.S. core inflation actually comes from cars. I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. You know, since inflation started rising, prices for cars, new and old, auto insurance, maintenance, and repair costs were really the biggest driver in the U.S. CPI index. They've been soaring between 40 to 50%. That's the highest line item in U.S. core inflation. But actually, that's not the type of inflation I'd call a cost of living crisis. Instead, that's driven by the fact that, you know, the share of SUVs, or call them light trucks, among all U.S. passenger cars has really risen from 50% to nowadays about 81% in less than 10 years. And look, that's not inflation. That's really well-to-do consumers splurging their money on bigger, pricier cars. Having said that, you know, a second concern which makes people grumpy, and I take very seriously, relates to home affordability. And that's really a serious problem across the rich world. You know, from America to New Zealand, millions of people around the world are nowadays spending more than a third, sometimes 40% of their disposable income on rent. That's a real problem. And, you know, in the U.S. real estate market, there are currently only 3.5 months supply of existing homes on the market. And of course, you know, high prices weaken home sales and housing-related retail sales. So what I make of that one, I think the good news is that renters are gaining a louder voice around the world. But the bad news, frankly, is that politicians mostly focus on the wrong solutions. Again, that's true very much around the world, often trying to fix prices rather than speeding up the construction of new supplies. So that's what I make of the conundrum. But, you know, it will pass, I believe.
It's interesting, Burkhard, in addition to the rising prices of Chicken McNuggets, which I can confirm is true, you also hinted about rising popularity as well as prices of gas-guzzling light trucks or SUVs. This prompts my second question. Can you tell us why, despite all of this, despite war in the Middle East, despite OPEC countries expected to announce supply cuts over this coming weekend, just exactly why have oil prices remained at such moderate levels? Isn't this another conundrum that investors are struggling with?
Well, it certainly is one. Let me just give you two spontaneous views on this. Number one, you know, people cheat and people try to free ride. That's just life. And, you know, it's not just people, it's organizations too. I mean, that's always a trouble with each and every cartel. And, you know, OPEC makes no exception. You know, members like Iraq and Kazakhstan and Russia have been trying to flout their commitments and free ride others. And the most serious one about cutting supply, because they got more skin in the game, is Saudi Arabia, because they're in the process of raising $12 billion equivalent from the sale of 0.6% of Saudi Aramco shares. So they really got an interest in cutting supply and raising oil prices. But see, the second reason for this conundrum is, at the same time, the non-OPEC producers, including and especially the U.S., of course, are pumping record amounts to drive up global production. At Canada's new Trans Mountain pipeline, which was just opened, at still tepid growth from China and cooling Israel-Iran tensions. I think that's how you can see why oil prices are sound but not soaring, and that's what resolves, in my view, the conundrum about oil prices at this stage.
So if we round out the conversation with the third conundrum of the week, while bond yields pushed higher, stocks didn't quite buckle under the pressure. So what should we make of this? Was the rise in yields just temporary, good, or maybe bad news for the markets? What do you think?
Yeah, I see the glasses being half full, not half empty. Let me just say that in our view, for one, it was probably temporary. We think, you know, at the end of this year, bond yields will be clearly lower than they are today. And having said that, the push-up in yields, in our view, is actually more good news than bad news. And that might sound paradoxical, but here's our two cents on it. Probably temporary, because inflation, in our view, is still dissipating. I mean, it was never supposed to be a walk in the park. It's, you know, but that's what's happening. And from that perspective, you know, if you have cash to put to work, quality bonds, in our view, on the back of this week's slight increase in yields, are still, and even more so, a very good buy. My second thought is, I think there are more good than bad reasons for the push in yields. It would be bad if they were pushed by inflation, but in our view, they're pushed by the strength of the economy much more than inflation. And that's positive. And third, and just to corroborate this, clearly the U.S. and the global economy have shown that they can live with higher yields. And that's really because the rich economies over the last few years have shifted from goods economies to service economies, which are just much less capital intensive. And so that's why business owners rarely mention the rising cost of capital as one of their key challenges. Add to that something I also mentioned, I think, in one of our conversations in the past, and this is often overlooked, the fact that record high private bond and money market holdings, especially in the United States, especially among wealthy baby boomers, whose interest income over the recent years has just doubled from $3 to $6.6 trillion. And now that's a powerful reminder that high yields are not only a cost of capital, but also a very powerful source of income for savers, and that makes them a stimulus for shoppers. So the long and short of it, despite, you know, conundrums and contradictions, which are the fun of life and markets, we do see more growth and upside for business and investors alike in this. I think investors, before the holiday season really starts to knock, should ensure that they position for that, take advantage of it before you head for the beach, and, well, at least for now, make the most of the weekend.
Burkhard, always thought-provoking insights. Thank you for dropping by as we close out another trading week to share with our listeners, our clients, your viewpoints on what the markets are telling us and what investors should be mindful of. And as always, looking forward to our next conversation. Thank you again.
Thank you, Dan. Have a very good rest of the day and a good weekend soon. All the best. Speak again next week. Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.